Press Podcast. I'm Spencer Dobson.
And I'm Corey Heidelberger. In this week's podcast, chickens in your backyard, swastikas on your wall, Jack Lee and Krebs lying with the dogs, Trump care destroys everything, and our future interview with City Council candidate Tom Black.
So how are you doing this week, Corey?
I'm doing great. It's springtime. How are you doing, Spencer?
I'm doing well, but tomorrow I have to go to Omaha. A friend of mine, rest in peace, Jeff Decker, has passed away. He was a musician. He was in a Kiss cover band. He was in a bunch of punk rock bands. But the milestone of this is my first friend to die of old age stuff. I've had friends die of rock and roll things. I think drunk driving, car accidents, that's not old. That's what young, cool people do. This is my first friend that died of, he had a heart attack. He's 47. That's young, but I'm 47.
Uh-oh.
Do you see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying.
Do you see why this is a problem?
Let's just not think about it. Although, I am sorry to hear about your friend.
I am sorry too, Jeff.
Sounds like he lived well.
He had a wonderful life, and the outpouring of support that he's gotten has been just fantastic. And they're having a big concert for him.
I was going to say, we playing Kiss at the funeral?
There's like literally 2 days of concerts of cover bands, and they're having Kiss karaoke, which is going to be a riot. We almost had him at our wedding. We thought it would be hilarious to have a Kiss cover band at the wedding, but they're a good Kiss cover band, so they're kind of expensive. But he was a really sweet guy, and he will be missed. And rest in peace, Jeff. So having said that, let's move on to our show. First of all, if you got a couple of bucks and you like listening to the Dakota Free Press podcast, throw us a couple of bucks. There's a tip jar right on the webpage. It's also
on the
comment section.
DakotaFreePress.com. Nice tip jar right on the right-hand side of the screen. Or on your phone, just scroll down to the bottom. It's somewhere there.
We have a great guest today, Tom Black. He's running for city council.
He does the Aberdeen Film Festival. He's our pigeon control officer. And now he wants to be on city council. Films, birds, and government. Can't beat that.
Busy, busy man. Well, let's move forward. Speaking of birds, topic number one. Now you can have chickens in your yard in Aberdeen, huh?
Chickens, you can't beat that.
You got your Wiley Park with your go-karts. You got your thriving downtown area. You got your mall that is still got some stuff in it. And now you can have a chicken in your yard.
Now, when did this come about, Spencer?
It just happened. It was just in the paper. Apparently they just sealed the deal on this. I don't remember the exact day, to be honest with you. But I live in an apartment, so now I have another incentive to buy a house in Aberdeen because I like omelets.
Do you think you'd get a chicken in your yard?
Yeah, actually, it's conceivable. We eat a lot of eggs, and I don't know if you ever had a fresh egg. You don't care about food, so it doesn't matter.
I'm just happy to eat whatever, but I appreciate do-it-yourself. So the idea of having an egg machine in my backyard,
sure,
that could be kind of fun.
Well, and a farm fresh egg is an amazing thing. Mm-hmm. So if you would like to share some of the eggs that you've got in your yards with me, Spencer at SpencerDobsonComedy.com. I will be happy to take them off your hand for you. Also, I wanted to put this in the podcast this week because this is the lightest, funniest thing that's happening in the world, and everything else is terrible. It's just terrible.
Of course, now, there are some people who don't like chickens in the backyard. I know in other towns in South Dakota, they've had this debate. In Brookings, I think they put an ordinance forward, and then I think it got referred and turned down by the public. They didn't want chickens in their backyard.
Well, I think once rooster time comes around, then we'll see.
When
we start getting a lot of noise around 6 a.m. in the morning, then everybody's opinion might be different. And you don't want the kind of chickens you eat in your backyard, according to the story, because they get too fat and it breaks their legs. You want the kind of chickens that lay eggs. And we looked it up. You get one egg a day out of a chicken. Sometimes they take a day off. So if you're going to make a quiche, you're going to need like 3 or 4 chickens.
Sure, sure. Some people, if they have the yard space, I guess they can do that. And really, I mean, deep down, I do support this kind of thing. I'm not going to rush out and get a chicken myself, but, you know, I don't rush out and do a lot of gardening myself either, because
sure,
I really am a frozen pizza kind of guy. That's what modern technology is for. Don't look at me like that. Frozen pizza is great.
You're an adult. Learn how to cook.
I do. Turn on the oven, put in pizza, and it's done. But I do. My wife is a great gardener, and I do appreciate walking out in my yard and getting food.
I believe your wife said she's making a pesto this summer. Is that correct?
She just bought the basil last weekend, actually, yes.
Sign me up. I will make a pesto pizza for you. I make exceptional pizza. It'll change your world.
I don't turn it down on principle.
And if you have an egg, you put an egg in the middle of the pizza. I know it sounds weird. The first time you do it, you're going to be like, I don't think that's right. I'm telling you, it's so right. And then you put a little arugula on there.
And if it's a homegrown egg, not from some corporate farm, all the better.
Rich, delicious. All right, let's dig into the mire. Topic number two. Okay, so there have been some swastikas showing up in the Aberdeen. And there was a letter by a guy named John Pfeiffer in the Aberdeen American News, and basically said that when he was a kid, he drew swastikas because they were easy to draw.
He was a kid a long time ago.
He was a kid a long time ago. His dad was in World War II. He explained it to him. And I remember in the 80s, some of the punk rock kids drew the swastikas and wore the swastikas. It was big in England for a while. I think England also got bombed by the Nazis, so it's like a weird reaction to that.
Yeah.
But it just kind of crossed over into America. This was a long time ago, mind you. And it just became, there was a little while where it was kind of fashionable to do that. I think we've had a discussion lately about why swastikas are inappropriate and why you shouldn't draw them. But there's a whole new generation of kids who went to school during No Child Left Behind, so they're dumb.
Right. We need to keep re-educating kids.
So we just need to keep reminding
Nobody's
people.
Born knowing about World War II or the
right.
fraught history of any given symbol. So it does behoove us to keep educating the next generation about why certain symbols just aren't acceptable, not even as a joke.
And I think John brings up an interesting point, though. Are they idiots or are they Nazis? Do they know what it means that they're doing?
The young people who, well, yeah. We're assuming young people. The graffiti artists who sprayed swastikas around Aberdeen in the past.
Right, because at first blush you go, oh, there are Nazis here. And I'm not saying there aren't Nazis here. There very well could be. And I've been to small towns where they'll have like a Confederate flag next to a Nazi flag. Those are definitely a house full of white supremacists. But, you know, again, it's hard to, I don't know.
Sure.
I don't want to be an alarmist, but I also don't want to downplay a real problem.
You're right, Spencer. We don't know. But let me give you this is my half-dad response, though I haven't had to have a talk with my daughter about why she shouldn't make swastikas, because she doesn't.
Right.
Because we're parents, and she knows better because we've parented.
Right.
So I'll give you I'll put my teacher hat on, give you my teacher answer. Yes, kids who are painting swastikas on other people's property are idiots and should knock it off, but they are also engaged in a behavior that does spread a hateful image
right.
and does harm that they may not even understand.
Yeah,
they're idiots. They don't know the harm they're doing,
right.
but they're doing that harm.
Right.
Whether they're white supremacists or not, they're doing it. And mm-hmm. that's why, you know, again, I put my teacher hat on and I say to the students, and I do say this a lot, I say, kids, Nazis are evil. Boom. It's just an absolute evil. Don't ever
sure,
do it.
Sure.
Don't be Nazis. And it comes up in class more often than you think because you read about World War II or you've got history, whatever. And so I guess my response to the swastikas is I'm not going to spend a lot of time psychoanalyzing and, you know, speculating about
right.
what was in their mind.
Right.
It's clear they don't understand the real impact of their symbol.
Right.
And so we have to say to them, don't put swastikas up. It's not just vandalism. It's also hate speech. And we're not going to accept it.
Well, and John also brings up something kind of interesting. From a graffiti standpoint, it was the easiest thing to draw. So there's also an argument that you need to get better at graffiti. I don't know if you've seen a train lately. There are some people doing some beautiful work out there. So you're not only a Nazi, you're a lazy Nazi who's not good at art.
Right.
So
and note the ease point there, too. Well, again, this is...
and I guess ironically, wasn't Hitler a failed artist?
Yes, this is the ugly graphic.
Don't be a better Nazi. Be a better painter.
And that's what. Well, that's why the symbol worked for Hitler. It was quick. It was easy. It's easy to replicate.
Right.
And thus, it's easy to spread.
Right.
And so, if you want, if kids want to make a provocative,
I've seen swastikas that were drawn wrong.
Oh, people
I've
can mess anything.
People
up,
that
right.
figured out how to not draw a swastika right.
But for kids who want to be provocative and mean and nasty, a swastika is just a really good excuse. It's just like swear words.
Yeah.
If I'm really mad, you know, people will say this. If you swear at someone and say, "Oh, f you," well, there's probably something more intelligent and developed and critical and helpful you could have said, like, you're making a huge mistake because, and you explain it.
Right, but that's not as funny.
Nobody wants to paint Mein Kampf on the side of a wall.
Right, but and also, if you're just angry, the F-U on a wall versus a swastika on a wall, two very, very different connotations.
Even there are different messages,
I mean, as
right.
far as where the buttons you're hitting, the depth you're hitting, whereas FU is going to offend everybody mildly. Mm-hmm. The swastika is, you know, that's a symbol of an evil,
right?
You know, of a real harm that has really been done to people. And again, if as he says, kids don't know that, then again, we do need to up our history classes a little bit.
Which thesis there, that the kids don't know that it's evil? Even that thesis, I think we should question. Because I think growing up in Western society now, even if you're a little kid, you've seen a movie with Nazis in it.
Right.
You've seen some imagery of Hitler. You've seen the swastika in context. I would contend it's almost impossible to be old enough to go get a can of spray paint in America and not understand that a swastika isn't just some quick symbol.
Right.
But that it contains some racist, evil Nazi overtone.
True. Yeah, I find it hard to believe you couldn't know that. But also, we did just elect Donald Trump president. So you know, you're never going to lose when you bet on Americans not being that smart.
Never sell the stupid people short.
Right.
I guess.
It's, you'd be amazed at how dumb we're capable of being. We, at any rate. If you're a punk ass and you're doing swastikas, I hope you should maybe read into it a little more deeply. And
you should cut it out. Don't paint swastikas.
Yeah, obviously don't paint. But you should also know why you shouldn't paint swastikas and become a better painter. And maybe you won't. Maybe you'll not hate people so much if you were a better painter. And again, go look at the trains. They're really beautiful.
Paint flowers next time.
I am pro graffiti. Go to Sioux Falls. Excuse me. Rapid City has a whole alley of just beautiful graffiti. They did a great job on it. So graffiti artists, I'm not against you. I'm just against Nazis. Boy, that was a bold, strong statement. That took a lot of courage. And now we're rolling over to topic three. I just saw a map that said that South Dakota is one of the least racist states in America.
Really?
And that's or that the Midwest. It showed like this broad swath of blue that was less racist. Then you go to the East Coast and it gets more racist. I don't know, man. It seems like we're working on it. I think it seems like some people are really putting some effort into upping their racist game. Gubernatorial candidate. And by the way, did you ever notice that the first half of gubernatorial candidate is goober?
Every time.
Yeah, I was trying to spell it today and not my strong suit. I do a lot of auto-correcting. There it is. Not the point. Marty Jackley attended an Act for America. I call him a show. An Act for America isn't a troop that teaches Americans how to act. That would be great. Act for America is a... what the Southern Poverty Law Center calls the largest grassroots anti-Muslim group in America.
Not these guys again.
And I believe your blog called them the new KKK, or it's the Muslim KKK. So we have people that are still, they're on tour, they're selling out shows at the Hilton, and they're really trying to get people to hate the Muslims.
And Marty Jackley went to one of their shows?
That's what I'm seeing.
Okay.
That's what it says.
Yeah.
I don't know if he bought any merch. I don't know if he got anybody's autograph, but he certainly went to the show.
What I read is this is alarming. We don't know what he did there. Mm-hmm. Apparently, the organizers of this event were really excited that Marty Jackley was there, and Secretary of State Chantel Krebs was at the same program in Rapid City a couple weekends ago. But Jackley and Krebs aren't saying anything about it. They won't say why they were there.
Sure.
Now, this bothers me on two levels. Number one, why is any statewide elected official going and watching an anti-Islam propaganda fest?
Right.
And number two, if they are going there, why won't they tell us why they were there? I'd love to hear Marty Jackley say, I wanted to understand the hateful messages being spread in our state so that I know how to counteract them. If that were the case, I'd love for him to say that.
Sure.
His failure to say that makes me nervous.
And I did a little homework onto what an Act for America presentation is like.
Mm-hmm.
The woman's name is Bridget Gabrielle. That is not her real name. And I guess I was in a little bit of a hurry when I put this together. She is from, not Syria, she's from Jordan, I think. And she suffered a lot during wars and things like that. And she's had a lot of problems with Muslims in her life. Not denying you that. However, she has come to America and is kind of selling this brand of BS. But let me give you the quote.
Sure.
That I thought was interesting. She was talking about Khizr Khan, who was the father of the soldier that died, the Trump Remember
yeah, Kaiser Kahn spoke at the Democratic National Convention. Exactly right.
His son is a hero who passed away, and I don't recall exactly what Trump said about him, but he gave him a hard time, and he got called out about it. So, according to Bridget Gabrielle, she says, so he's lying either way. He's either a practicing Muslim or he is not. He is not a practicing Muslim, then the Constitution is the law above all laws that governs everybody, just like we believe that. But a practicing Muslim cannot, in good conscience, hold the Constitution and say that he abides by the Constitution and lives by the Constitution, because according to Sharia law, which every devout Muslim follows, the Constitution is a man-made law and it cannot be followed. Now, that is very similar to something else said by, I don't know if you've heard of this guy, his name's Mike Pence. He's the Vice President of the United States. I think that's almost exactly the same as saying, I'm a Christian first, I'm a conservative second, and I'm a Republican third.
And I didn't hear constitutionalist in there, or loyal American in there.
Nothing about any of that.
Well, and
it seems like you're putting your religion above our laws, which is what she's accusing them of doing, which I don't think they're doing.
And when you mention her accusation, it reminds me of Mike Pence. It also reminds me of a fellow named John Kennedy, who himself didn't make pledges like this, but who people criticized 50, 60 years ago, saying, right. Oh, well, he's Catholic.
Right.
So he follows that religion and his Pope first. So obviously he can't be a loyal American.
Right.
This man who served in World War II, suffered injuries for his country, and then became president.
They're not even bothering to write new material.
No. Now, that's plagiarism almost, for Pete's sake.
Well, it's the equivalent of doing a cover song at the bare minimum.
Yeah, and Marty Jackley goes and listens to this propaganda. Mm-hmm. A guy who wants to be our governor goes and listens to this propaganda.
Right.
Marty, I'm disappointed, man.
Yeah, it's
ugly. Come on the show and explain yourself, Marty. Exactly. We'd like to hear what you
exactly
heard.
Exactly right. And to question the patriotism of a guy whose son died serving this country, I think is vulgar.
Right, right.
And now let's talk about something else that's equally vulgar. Let's pause for a second and remember the chickens. Oh, that was fun.
Ah, chickens.
Fun talking about the chickens.
Chickens in the backyard.
Now we're going to go in depth. Okay, I don't know if you've been reading the paper. I think you have, but they're messing around with a healthcare system, and they put a bill through the House. I'm to be honest with you, I have not read the whole bill because it's going to die a horrible death in the Senate because it's a terrible, terrible, terrible piece of legislation.
It's okay, Spencer. Nobody in the House who voted for it read the whole bill either.
However, people have signed off for it, and when you sign off on something, even if you didn't read it, it means you approve of it, correct?
Mm-hmm. And that would be Kristi Noem, for one. Mm-hmm. Our sole congressperson from South Dakota voted for the American Health Care Act, also known as Trump Care.
Right. Do you want to read this, or do you want me to?
Oh, go for it.
All right. Under the House bill, large employers could choose the benefit requirements from any state, including those that are allowed to lower their benchmarks under a waiver, health analysts said. By choosing a waiver state, employers looking to lower their costs could impose lifetime limits and eliminate the out-of-pocket cost cap for their plans under the GOP legislation.
Now, let me tell you what that means, Spencer. Or tell the folks out there what that means, just
yes,
so everybody
break
gets
that
this.
Down.
This came from an article in the Wall Street Journal last week. So it's quality stuff, you know. Before Obamacare, before the Affordable Care Act that we have now, it was tough for people to get insurance if they didn't get insurance from their employer.
Right.
Employer-based insurance is pretty good. You get a job, the boss says, oh yeah, we've got health insurance, and you're pretty much in good shape.
Right.
You lose your job, you've got to go buy insurance on your own, and that was really difficult for people.
Right.
When the Affordable Care Act came into play, that got a little easier, and people on the individual market had protections. You couldn't be thrown off for having had cancer or pneumonia or something beforehand, the whole pre-existing conditions debate. The Affordable Care Act was largely good for people buying their own insurance.
Right.
It had some effect on people getting insurance through their bosses, but not as much.
But and that makes it possible for people to be entrepreneurs, for example, to start your own business.
That's one of the great. Yes, that's a very good example, Spencer. Because, well, like you even. I mean, you're self-employed.
Right.
You're able to do that a bit more freely now because you are guaranteed access to health insurance. You still got to pay money for it, but you can get it. 7 years ago, before the Affordable Care Act, you might have been stuck in some job and afraid to step away and do your comedy.
Right.
Because, well, my boss is paying my health insurance and I can't afford it on my own.
Right.
Affordable Care Act did something about that. Repealing the Affordable Care Act, that's what this new Trump Care is about, it puts you in a bad spot, Spencer.
Right.
Because you're self-employed and suddenly your guarantee of insurance is a lot shakier. Mm-hmm. But people who have insurance through their employers could also be in trouble. Mm-hmm. Because what you just read, there's a provision where employer-based policies could say, you know what? We're not going to offer as much coverage. And even if your state requires really good coverage, if we've got employees in other states, we're going to go with that state's rules. And so it's kind of a race to the bottom where if, let's say you work for 3M
right.
or Twin City Fan or some other really big company. If you work for some company, they might say to you, hey, great, you've got insurance through our company, but you have to pay X amount out of pocket.
Right.
Right now, that's limited. They can't charge. I don't know what the numbers are. They vary. But they could lift those limits, and you could go broke just with your out-of-pocket costs.
That's exactly what I'm pointing at right now.
That's the one. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that basically means, and your out-of-pocket cost is what you pay
right.
when you go to the doctor.
Yeah, like your deductible or the right. before the insurance covers everything else.
Right.
The more that stacks up, the poorer you're going to be,
right.
even if you've got a great employer plan. And then, if they don't break you on your out-of-pocket, they might put caps on your lifetime benefits. Mm-hmm. They might say, you know what? You got great insurance, but we're only paying out $1 million.
Right.
And so if you get some nasty disease,
right.
or you're in a big car wreck that requires a lot of, you know, reconstructive surgery and therapy and all that, once you've used up $1 million or once your family's used up $1 million, the insurance company says, thanks for doing business. You get no more from us.
Well, and this is clearly not great legislation, but only the House, those are the only people that are signing off on it, right?
Well, so far, you would hope.
I mean, or they'd even think it's a good idea. Not, like Dennis Dugard, just kidding. He likes it too. He said Monday that he would consider allowing South Dakota to opt out of the Affordable Care Act's pre-existing condition rules. Once again, pre-existing condition rules, if you have a heart condition, they'll still have to cover you. If you have diabetes, they still have to cover you. Isn't rape now a pre-existing condition? And like,
yes. And was. That's the thing. Before Obamacare, sexual assault, domestic abuse. An insurer could look at a woman coming and applying for insurance and say, you've been abused by your husband or you were a victim of rape. We're not going to extend you a policy because you might have more health problems. Or even if they give you a policy, they're going to charge you 2, 3, 4 times more as a premium. That's what Kristi Noem voted to do last week, is make that possible again, to charge you so much for your insurance just because of a pre-existing condition that you can't afford it.
And currently, you're protected. But again, Dennis Dugard said Monday that he would consider allowing South Dakota to opt out of the Affordable Care Act's pre-existing condition rules if a Republican repeal bill makes it through the Senate. The Republican governor said mm-hmm. that many South Dakota residents have expressed a desire to keep the rules, but might not realize the extent to which they can create a financial burden for the state.
Oh. Wait. South Dakotans want to keep these protections?
Oh, and sure.
Dugard still says, no, we just need to get rid of them.
Yeah, it's as if they hadn't. I mean, what if there was a way that we could pool our money together so that when you're healthy, your money is going to help somebody who's sick, and then when you're sick, healthy people's money is going to help you? That seems like a way that we could kind of make this work out for everybody, but they'll never come up with something like that. I'm going to continue his quote. I think most citizens are probably not conscious of the cost, so a responsible government has to weigh both sides. Really? Really? You think people that go broke paying their hospital bills don't know how much it costs?
I'm keenly aware of how much my healthcare costs.
Oh, totally. Totally.
We've got good insurance now, and I still don't go to the doctor. Every time I feel sick, I'm like, I hope I don't have to go because it's going to cost me money.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, my wife gets to go to the doctor periodically because lady parts are expensive, as it turns out. And But something's got to fall off. I mean, I'm going to the doctor in a couple of weeks just to have them take my temperature and tell me I'm not dead yet. But that's about as far as that goes.
Dennis, to review, we understand how much healthcare costs,
yeah.
but continue.
Yeah, well, that's why we're trying to set up a system where, once again, it just seems like everybody kind of throws in the pot, then the sick people get taken care of, and then when you're sick, it's like, it's complicated. But Mike Rounds, I don't have to go over that again. Here's what Mike Rounds said. I think the American Healthcare Act, which recently passed the House of Representatives, is a step in the right direction. Really? Removing mandates, eliminating taxes, providing more. How do you think things are paid for if you're eliminating? I mean, again, nobody wants to get taxed to death. We'll editorialize in a moment. Providing more flexibility for states and clearing a path for a free market. Yeah, because the free market. We'll editorialize on that. For the free market to work again, all are good steps toward reducing premiums for families and employers. But it's not perfect, and I would like to see improvements, including a transition plan for folks in retirement, clear assurances on how we'll handle pre-existing conditions, and stronger promotion of group insurance plans, because that is the most effective delivery system we have. Should the House bill be improved? Absolutely. Is it better than Obamacare? Without a doubt. No, I don't know about that. See, I think Mike's trying to play both sides of the field here. And it's, I think he doesn't want to come right out and say this is garbage.
Yeah, Mike Rounds, former insurance agent, many of whose family members still work for Fisher Rounds Insurance here in South Dakota.
Did not know that.
He's just trying to sound like a nice guy.
Right.
And, I mean, Spencer, yeah, you could barely get through it. Anybody who says we need to get back to the free market has forgotten that the free market's failures...
Yeah.
Are what got us into the discussion of the Affordable Care Act in the first place, and are what have gotten almost every other industrialized nation into offering some non-free market system to ensure that every one of their citizens can afford health care without going bankrupt.
Donald Trump himself, when he was talking about how hard it is to be president because it's super hard and I didn't know it would be so hard. But he was talking about how when you're a businessman, you can just make hard choices and it doesn't matter because you don't have to have a heart. But when you're in the government, everything impacts everybody and everything has an effect on everybody and you have to have a heart, which must be difficult for him. But that's exactly the point. That's why you can't have the free market dictate these things, because it literally is life and death. I know you posted a bunch of the Jimmy Kimmel
about his son having that heart defect. Right.
And Jimmy Kimmel, like, I've never seen Jimmy Kimmel cry, and he's a very funny man, and he was really choked up about it. This is the difference between children living and dying. I mean, if you're as pro-life as these people claim to be, then it's impossible that you don't want people to have affordable, accessible health care.
And even heck, I'll give Donald Trump some props on the show. Bookmark that, everybody. Donald Trump's own words were, he wants a plan that guarantees insurance for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
He said he wants a plan that gives better care and costs less.
Right.
We haven't seen any sign of that from anything from the folks that you just read there. We aren't seeing insurance for everybody.
No, not even close.
We're seeing very much the prospect of states being able to cut people out of the system,
mm-hmm.
or price them out of the system.
Right.
That's fewer people with insurance. We're seeing nothing about making it cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Again, more expensive for lots of people. And we're not seeing anything about actual better care for people. It's more like people won't be able to afford to get any care.
Right. As they've said a million times, Obamacare is a three-legged chair. If you cut out the opt-in requirement, which is what the House bill does.
The requirement that everybody buy
health
insurance.
Everybody has to be in. Yeah.
Right.
If you get rid of that, it falls over.
Mm-hmm.
If you get rid of the... if you start a different marketplace for pre-existing conditions, it falls apart because that marketplace isn't going to function and it's going to be so expensive it's not going to have a point.
Right. Well, that's the high-risk pools is what they're calling them.
Exactly.
And that's exactly the problem. South Dakota had a high-risk pool before the whole Affordable Care Act.
Right.
It had a few hundred people in, all of whom had expensive medical conditions.
Right.
Like you said it, a bunch of people who are going to need a lot of health care aren't going to be able to afford the premiums for each other.
Right.
You need a mix of people who right now are feeling good. They're subsidizing the system for those who happen to be ill right now.
Right.
And then someday it's going to be our turn. And every one of us will catch something.
Sooner or later.
Nothing else, old age.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why we have Medicare. Because the free market
can't
take care of old people.
Right.
We've got a system where we guarantee every senior citizen in America this coverage. And we do it through government and taxes.
Yeah.
Because we know the free market didn't do it. So even Trump is saying we want insurance for everybody. No one's made that. No one on the Republican side has offered that plan yet. They've offered the opposite.
This might be a stretch. My hope is this is just a piece of performance art to get people to wake up and pay attention to civics and how the healthcare system works. But I think, again, it's just bad legislation put forth by people that I don't know what they're thinking.
It's bad legislation, and I'm going to put my partisan hat on for a moment and say, I hope every Democrat is paying attention. This healthcare legislation from the Republicans is so bad that I would contend Democrats can drop any other messaging they were planning for 2018 and run their campaigns next year entirely on this one issue.
So do you have... Explain. Tell us how they would do that, Corey.
Well, okay, now understand, I've run for election before and lost, so I'm not really an expert on winning elections.
Right.
I'm not a politician. I just play one on the internet. But supposedly winning elections is about winning votes and winning over different sectors of voters. Let's take a rundown. Trump care, Noam care, what does it do? Well, it raises your out-of-pocket costs, like we mentioned. It could lower your lifetime spending. It'd cap your insurance for a lifetime limit on employer-based plans. So there you've got workers with good employer-based insurance. That's a lot of you out there. They're mad. They lose on this, on the Republican plan. Pre-existing conditions. You lose those protections. That affects everybody out there who's sick, who's had a baby, who's maybe been a victim of a violent crime or sexual assault. That's a lot of people who should be upset about this bill, who Republicans are saying, who cares if you have insurance? Then you've got Medicaid expansion. That disappears under the Republican plan. So you've got millions of lower-income working Americans who lose their affordable health insurance. Those people are going to be mad. You get rid of the cutting Medicaid also hurts special education. There are special education students who will lose services in the schools because of this Republican health care bill. So now you're hurting poor kids, special education kids. And then cutting Medicaid also means you're going to leave out the elderly. You're going to leave out the disabled, because even though Medicare does most elderly care, Medicaid still pays for a lot of the nursing home care. And that applies to the elderly, the disabled. And this is all to pay for tax cuts, $300 billion of which go to the top 1% in the United States.
Another thing Jimmy Kimmel said, don't give tax cuts to the rich. We don't need them.
Like Kimmel said, you want to pay for it? Don't cut my taxes.
Right.
That's the spirit we need. So politically, now, I mean, we're talking about human beings here, so it's crass to talk politically. But politically, think about it.
Right.
You've got a bill that does harm to workers, women, kids, the poor, the sick, sexual assault victims, the elderly, the disabled, and special education students.
That pretty much covers it.
There's your votes. And the only people getting good out of this are Donald Trump getting a tax break.
Yeah.
That's all you need to run on. This is that bad of a health care bill. It's bad for America, and it's going to be bad for the Republicans.
There you go. Speaking of people running for office, though, you know who's running for office? Tom Black.
He's my neighbor. He lives on the street.
I like Tom Black. He's a good egg. I don't want to sway your opinion on this. I realize it's a political interview, but he's running for city council. Did you know that?
For Aberdeen City Council in the Northwest District, and he was nice enough to sit down with the Dakota Free Press podcast and tell us why he wants to get into this job.
My name's Tom Black. Born and raised in Pierce, South Dakota. Moved to Aberdeen when I was seeking college, 1988, Northern State University, graduated with a degree in marketing education. Fell in love with Aberdeen as a high school kid because of the theater that was available at the university and theater that was going on in the community. I've been growing up a theater kid. Came to Aberdeen, absolutely loved it. In fact, loved it so much my parents were a little disappointed I didn't come home as often as I should. Aberdeen has always had a really great, vibrant theater program, theater community, but also music community, fine arts community, and that made it a really wonderful place for me to live. Also, being a sports fanatic, you got some college sports here, so I decided to stay in Aberdeen long after graduation, and with exception of 2 quick years down to Phoenix, which we decided to move back to Aberdeen, largely because of what we could do in Aberdeen versus observing the world go by in other communities. We decided you can participate in the world in Aberdeen. When we lived in Phoenix or lived in Pierre, you got to observe a lot of things come and go. But when you're in Aberdeen, you can actually be a part of or start or instigate a community in Aberdeen. And so that was our choice, my sweetheart Amy and I, when we chose to make our move back here.
Well, let's talk about some of the things we can do
here
in Aberdeen, if that's
absolutely
all right. You're running for city council.
I am.
That's certainly something to do here to make a difference. Let's work through this. First of all, talk about some things that you see the city council doing that you think it's doing right and that you, as a potential commissioner, want to keep going.
One of the things that I think the city council did right, and this is going to be hard to understand for some people, but myself, I understand it really well. One of the things that city council has done right over the years, and this is going to be over the decades, is sometimes you have to look beyond the will of the people. And I know this is going to sound really, really horrible, but it's playing out right now. Back when Webb Water wanted to come into Aberdeen, South Dakota, and they pushed really hard. Kurt Hohn, love him, great director of the Webb Water Company. Kurt put on a full court press to sign up communities, and he wanted to sign up Aberdeen, South Dakota for Webb Water service. And yes, we probably would have had a more stable water program. We would have had a water supply that would have been maybe a little bit more consistent in flavor, and that could have been all great, and that's certainly what the populace wanted. However, they couldn't guarantee expansion and growth of our water program. And we're finding out right now that Webb Water is tapped and capped, which certainly would have been an economic impedance to the city of Aberdeen.
They've put a moratorium on new hookups in the communities around Aberdeen, right?
Absolutely. So on occasion, as a city councilor, you have to look at what is best for the city. And sometimes popular sentiment isn't always what's best for the long term, for the 100-year plan of the community. If we had signed up for Webb Water 15 years ago, or whatever the time frame would have been, we would be at a complete halt for economic growth. We would be at a complete halt for housing development, a complete halt for new agricultural companies coming into our community, like AGP and
the new soybean plant we're building. They need a lot of water, right?
Right. So the reason, your question, what do I like about what the city council does, and what I think a great city council member does, is not look at what's great for this minute and for me this minute, but what's great for the community for a lifetime. Because truly the decisions that are made right now will absolutely impact our grandchildren. And yes, there are things though that we can adjust to popular sentiment. Should we have more publicly funded art in our community? Should we have some statues, in other words, laying around our community to make our community look more beautiful? Yes, that's inexpensive, that's affordable, and can make our community a really attractive place to be. We should be doing that.
But you want to ask the people in an issue like that, well, what do you want? Where should such things go?
Absolutely. We need to listen to our community, but we also need to really project what do we need in a community. And other things that are going on locally right now. We could say in the last 12 months, there's been an uprising of people who maybe not happy with outsiders coming into Aberdeen. And we could say they're an uprising of people that may not like the fact that there's maybe Muslims coming to Aberdeen, or maybe people of other nationalities coming to our community. And we could have some sort of snap reaction, but what we really need to do is we need to sit down, really investigate the process, really investigate what is a great answer and what isn't a great answer to our community. Yes, we want to keep everybody safe in our community. We want to keep them safe from the people that have been living here for 40 years. We want to keep them safe from people that have moved here last week. Safety is universal.
For everybody in town, regardless of when they got
here. We do not need to be making snap reactions to the fact that some people from Korean, some people from Somalia, some people from South Africa, some people that have been living in our country all over, from Flint, Michigan, Alabama, St. Paul, are moving to our community. We shouldn't shut our walls down, build walls, shut down our borders, which some people in our community are really, really, really wanting to do. Sometimes as city council members, you have to make tough decisions. And it would be easy to say, we want to stop growth. We want to stop people coming from outside. But when we look at people coming to our community, that is really the future of our community. It's been the future of our nation since its inception, and it will certainly be the future of our community. Regardless of whether you want it or not, it's going to be the future of our community.
So as you've been running now for city commission, I mean, the candidates had to file by the end of March here, so we're a month or so into the campaign and a month away from the election. Have you heard either voters or even other candidates making an issue of this immigration issue?
Well, I don't know that I've heard any candidates. There hasn't been a lot of public forum, so I don't want to put words in the mouths of any other candidates. But I have knocked on plenty of doors, and I've got a few hundred more doors to knock on, and I have heard that at the door. You know, are you going to prevent Muslims from coming to Aberdeen?
Prevent them from coming to town. That's what people ask.
Well, okay. This is incredibly limited, but it was a question.
This is not a scientific survey, of course.
No scientific survey, not at all. But one person's concern can all of a sudden be elevated to a scare through a community. You know very well that we've had some speakers come from outside of our community talking about Muslim migration into the United States. And largely inside our community, it's a non-starter. It just, most of the people who are making it to Aberdeen have already been in the United States for a number of years, sometimes decades. Some of them are even second generation. They're bringing families in. As a home inspector, which is what I do for a living, I've helped people from Burma, from the Karen population that have been purchasing houses here in Aberdeen, and have helped a Somalian family help purchase that house here. A lot of people are just running on base level fears, but it's not inappropriate to have a fear. Okay, everybody wants to live safe. Everybody wants to walk down the street safe. That's all great and dandy. But what we really need to do is we need to talk to our professionals in the industry, the people on the streets, the boys in blue, Captain McNeil of our police department, and we need to trust that they are doing their best they can to keep us safe. And currently, it doesn't sound like there's anything to worry about with any immigrants or people coming from other parts of the country causing more crime than the people who are already living here.
Is there anything the city council can do to kind of educate the population and just kind of address fears?
Yeah, I really do think there is, but education only goes as far as people want to be educated. You know, there's a certain point in time when you just beat your head against the wall and you're just never going to win. But I do believe that that is a point where our city council hasn't maybe done as well as they possibly could, maybe getting in front of the issue of our community change. I'll go back a couple of maybe 15 years ago when the turkey plant, which ended up in Huron, was on the table to come to Aberdeen. And there was an incredibly negative sentiment about a Hutterite-owned business coming to the edge of Aberdeen that would bring hundreds of employees. And there was a really, really a negative sentiment. And ultimately, the city itself not the city government, that's not the point, but there was a lot of negative sentiment, and we didn't put all of our weight behind that economic opportunity. And it's been a phenomenal opportunity for Huron, not without growth pains, certainly, but I think the sentiment did change when the beef plant was an opportunity for us, and we said, okay, we can't miss another one of these opportunities. Yes, it's been a problem getting it up and going. There was all sorts of issues, lawsuits and things like that. But now that it is up and going, it's doing quite well. I think it's an opportunity for us to say, yeah, you know, we have been doing this. Look at the number, the hundreds of families that have come to our community. And without these hundreds of families that have come to our community, where would our economy in Aberdeen be? At the national level, it's very common to discuss immigration as not necessarily humans coming across a border, but immigration is really a jobs discussion because there's just certain jobs that people don't want to do with their white collar aspirations, but there's jobs that need to be done. Dismembering a cow or laying fiberglass on a wind turbine, not everybody wants to do that, but they're great jobs. They pay pretty well. They're relatively stable for the most part, though we have seen a layoff or two, but a lot of people hired back at the fiberglass plant. But I guess where I'm going with this is those are hundreds of families that are now in our community that are now paying property tax, that are paying sales tax, they're renting from landlords, they're buying groceries at our grocery stores. And in a world, in an environment right now where we're dealing with flat revenue in our community, where would our revenue have been without these hundreds of families coming to our community? Our revenue would be in the tank. So anybody who wants to say we want to close our community down, we want to shut down, we don't want growth, is not aware of where our city revenues are at and where our community should be going in the next few years.
I can see in what you're saying there sort of an argument that, I mean, the dollars will take care of everything. When we need jobs done and we need sales revenue, that'll overcome any fears we have. But I wonder, you know, from a city council perspective, what can the city council do to make folks want to come to Aberdeen to work and to live? What can we do to welcome, you know, immigrants from anywhere to our community?
And when I use the word immigrant, I'll even talk about a couple of friends I've made from Alabama. Okay, the economy in Alabama was in the tank, and these gentlemen were looking for jobs, and they heard there was work up here in Aberdeen, South Dakota, so they came, and they ended up bringing half a dozen guys with them. After, the first one got here and said, yep, this is legit, cool little town, fun little nightlife, and a lot of live music, we got to get up here. So half a dozen followed up here. And the things that we need to do in a community, to answer your question, Corey, directly, we need to make a welcoming community, okay? Small towns are clicky. You tend to know your 50 friends that come to your holiday party, and that tends to be about where you end up being. I think having a few of the churches in our community that have opened their doors to some evening events, some meal opportunities, that's kind of cool. I think the Aberdeen Chamber of Commerce has done a pretty good job, though I think there's room for improvement there. That's not really city council, but I think encouragement from the city council, making their idea of coming up with a very definitive walls of a visitor center, which isn't just visitors coming in for the weekend, but visitors that are coming here looking for a career and a lifetime. I don't think that's a bad idea at all. Whether we make millions of dollars investment in it, that's up for discussion yet. We haven't seen business plans that have come out for it, but the concept of a one-stop shopping, how can I get involved in our community location? Where can I go? Where's the super Walmart of information in Aberdeen? And I think that's something that the Chamber of Commerce, the Convention and Visitors Bureau, Downtown Association, a few other organizations could collaborate on, so you don't end up bouncing around and just getting kicked from one phone number to the next. Also, of course, digitally reorganizing and making a very cohesive message about where to go, who to contact, what information can you get online. After you review a lot of our city webpage stuff, it's not entirely clear as to where to go for what information. So those are two super, super simple things. Long term, though, as humans, we just need to open our doors. We need to go back out into our front yards. We need to take a pie over to that new neighbor. Okay, that's what my mom just moved into Aberdeen after 47 years in Pierce. She just moved to Aberdeen a summer ago. And she took a plate of cookies over to her neighbors and said, hello. Okay, well, we should be doing that if you see somebody new move into your neighborhood. And that's a community message.
And not just a government job, but an everybody job.
That's an everybody job. That doesn't matter what community you live in. Messaging, what is the brand of Aberdeen? Currently, we're running down this kind of brand discussion of, you know, write your story in Aberdeen. I think it's been a missed message. I don't think we need to spend $40,000 or whatever it was the last time we did a brand messaging. I think we have a lot of really super smart people in our community that can put back together a brand messaging that makes it easier to identify with what Aberdeen is, who do we want to be. That helps attract people. And then just, of course, making awareness of the really, really great opportunities to live here. I don't know if you're familiar with Richard Florida and his entire discussion and books and speaking engagements with what was called the creative class.
Creative class, yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of this,
yeah. Yes. And we stretched down that road for a number of years through a variety of organizations here in Aberdeen. The creative class, for information in case you don't know, is basically pleading or constructing your community so that it's attractive to artists and musicians and theater folk and all those people who add beauty to a community, so that the people who are running the white collar jobs or the blue collar jobs or the people who are looking to move to your community can come in and say, wow, there's funky jazz culture in Aberdeen, or there's a really great art galleries in Aberdeen. It's indirect living. It's helping encourage a beautiful community so that people say, I want to do app development in that community because I love their music scene.
That's a really neat kind of overarching vision of what a community can be and the image it can project. Given that, I kind of hate to ask this one final question, but from what I hear, you have improved the community in a much more earthy way.
Final question already?
Things move fast during an election.
Yeah.
But you are also the city's pigeon control contractor. Is that correct?
Well, you could have asked about my development and founding of the South Dakota Film Festival, the Fishguard short film project, or my work with all the other nonprofit organizations.
Well, you're famous for that.
But
that's up on the big
screen. Brought up the pigeons. Okay.
The pigeons. People don't see this work. Tell us in the short form of what you've done for Aberdeen in terms of pigeon control.
There was a problem with too many pigeons in our community, and they were creating a little bit of a filth nuisance. I particularly like pigeons. I think they're a cool and really, really intelligent bird. But we were getting a situation where there's just too many of them centralized, in particular in our downtown district. So I came up with an idea. I pitched it to the city leaders and with minimal compensation. And if I had known how hard it was going to be, I would have quadrupled my compensation package. But I did it as a community service as much as I could, but I had to pay for bait and traps and things like that. So in the first 12 months, we did reduce the population by about 5,500 pigeons, and we're still continuing to do that. And the signs are pretty clear in our community that the pigeon population is going down.
Why don't you tell us about South Dakota Film
Festival? I'd love to. Thank you so much. That's so much more fun than pigeons. We are in our we're celebrating our 10th anniversary. Myself and quite a few friends, including and cannot go without mention Brent Brandt, who is a stalwart member of our community. We've been running the South Dakota Film Festival now, and this will be our 10th anniversary in 2017. It was we've done a really, really cool thing in that we've developed an art opportunity not only for local and regional people to show and screen their films, but also to attract people from all over the world to our community and show them a little bit of what South Dakota can be in northeastern South Dakota. We've had countless hundreds of guests, and we have so many repeat filmmakers that love to come back because we show them a great time. And the community of Aberdeen, though, the businesses in Aberdeen have been so incredibly supportive, not possible without what we have in our community. And I think every 501c3, every special event, art event, or anything that's fundraising in our community absolutely agrees how important our business community is. Those people that could take that $500 or $1,000 and put it in their own pocket or make another payment on their big truck or whatever, they're saying, here's $1,000, go make Aberdeen a little bit more cool. And whether it's the film festival or art on walls or music in businesses or whatever it happens to be, I just think Aberdeen's such a gracious community for donating to the universities, the Safe Harbor, to the film festival and all that. So it's just proves again one more time why Aberdeen's such a fantastic community.
Make Aberdeen more welcoming. Make Aberdeen cooler.
Get us some advertisement, frankly. You know, Aberdeen rarely gets the spotlight when it comes to media in the community. And if we can say, hey, we're bringing in Molly Ringwald, Carrie Elwes, Kevin Costner, all of a sudden, finally, the Argus leader in Kella Land put us on the news.
Now, do you have a website for your candidacy, or where can people go find out more about you?
Oh, it's very cryptic. You got to go through Facebook, but it's Tom Black for Aberdeen on Facebook, so it's pretty easy.
And Tom is spelled like Tom, and Black is spelled like Black?
Yes. It's rumored my family's named the hills and the sea, but I don't think that's the case. We're just like the Crayola. We are Tom Black on Facebook, but my phone number is in the phone book. If anybody has a direct question, I'd be more than happy to help them out. You can get through to me through the South Dakota Film Festival, through the Fishguard Short Film Project. You can get to me through Facebook page. I'll friend you and we can chat.
Great. Well, Tom Black, candidate for the
Northwest
District,
which includes State Street West. Until you get down to the railroad tracks, then it's Main Street West.
There you go. If you have any questions, you can check the map on the City Council webpage or call Tom Black himself. Look him up. Go onto his Facebook page. Find out more from this candidate for City Council. Tom Black, thanks for talking to Dakota Free Press.
Thanks for giving me free airtime.
Thank you, Bird Killer Tom Black.
And Film Festival Entrepreneur.
Yes, and Film Festival. creator Tom Black. So good. Thanks for coming out and talking to us. Let's go over a couple things. We got a progressive happy hour happening Friday.
We've got a progressive happy hour happening this Friday, and that's at 5 o'clock at the Ward here in downtown Aberdeen. But next Friday, March 19th, we talked big and bad about healthcare at the top. We're going to have a march for healthcare. Again, march for women, march for science, march for healthcare. I don't know why we have to keep marching for the obvious, but troubled times call for drastic action. Friday, March 19th, 5 o'clock, we're going to meet outside the Ward on Main Street, and we're going to march down Main Street with some signs and some friends to say, we want to protect health care benefits for all Americans. We're going to talk about the policies that would be good for South Dakota, and then we're going to come back to the Ward at 6. We'll sit down in the bar. Actually, we might stand. It might be crowded, and we're going to have some speakers who are going to talk about how health care reform has affected them up to now, what they're thinking about the current plans, and maybe what we hope for the future for healthcare for all South Dakotans and all Americans. So Friday, March, I keep saying March, we're marching on May 19th, 5 p.m. here in Aberdeen to stand up for good healthcare for all Americans.
Okay, and once again, if you have a couple of bucks, if you enjoy this podcast and if you'd like to support it, we have a tip jar on the webpage. It's also in the comment section. Anything you could give would be greatly appreciated. Do you remember the guy's name?
We did, but I don't have the roster. I won't embarrass our donors because some of them might want to keep it quiet there.
Fair
but
enough.
Some wonderful people did ring the tip jar last week, and we appreciate that. And that does help practically keep things running, buy things like web hosting and that. Your help keeps us coming and bringing this service to you every day.
All right, I'm Spencer Dobson.
And I'm Corey Heidelberger. Thank you so much for listening to the Dakota Free Press Podcast.
See you next time.